So first of all, I'd like to say that it's very, very nice to be back here amongst all the devotees. We missed last year due to some arrangement of Krishna's, and so it's very nice to be back and to see all the old familiar faces and also the new faces that are inevitably our welcome guests this year. So thank you. As one guest to another, thank you very much. So this year, as I said, I wanted to find some subject matter that was important for us and also linked us with our tradition. Because without that linking to the spiritual culture, then we find ourselves kind of somewhat in isolation, because more or less, if you listen very carefully to Srila Prabhupada, and you should, you'll find that his views of reality and his way of looking at life is in contradiction to the way that the world is working and going on today. And so this can become, for one who becomes actually desirous to become more deeply serious, this can create a kind of a loneliness. I noticed, for example, when we were coming in from Perth on the airplane, we got off the plane and you enter into the flow of all the people coming into Melbourne from all the planes. And there we were in our traditional Indian dress, getting on in age, white hair, kind of, struggling along with our bags. And I looked at my husband and I said, it's kind of lonely, isn't it? Sort of going against the flow, because everybody else, all the women were dressed very fancy and moving along, and the men were all dressed in their ways. And you can see that the world, you can see it when you're on the plane, on the type of cinematography that you have to be exposed to, that it's actually, if you stop and think, is quite shocking. Because what you see before you is completely, completely opposite, in defiance of Krishna conscious principles. I one time had an elderly lady I knew very well in Delhi, who I was visiting and preaching to, and she was in her, she had arthritis, she couldn't move her hands very well, and she was in the last stage of her life when she had come in touch with Krishna consciousness. And she had been, her husband was an ambassador for the Indian government. She had been a very, very politically, socially clever lady. She played the veena, she had traveled the world, lived in Japan, lived in New York, lived in all the different places, knew all the social elite and the political world. And now at the end of her life, she was finding out about Krishna consciousness. So she was trying to do something that was radical. She was trying to change all her values at this very, very late stage. And so she used to like it when I'd visit her, because in her family, nobody else was doing that, not her husband and not her son. And so one time I said to her, I went to visit her, and she was sitting with me, and we were talking something about Krishna consciousness, and she said, when I sit in front for the pleasure of my son and my husband, I have to watch television because they become upset if I don't participate. And she said, I said to her actually, I said, you know, I just in that 5 minutes that I had to sit with her, I said, they broke all the regulative principles in 5 minutes on the movie, and I just thought, one, two, three, four, gone. And she said, what about me? I live in this household and all those regulative principles are broken constantly. So I began to think, yes, this is actually quite difficult. Quite difficult for her, and she's quite brave to take up the challenge of acceptance of a different, not only a different culture, because it was her culture, she's Indian, she's traditionally, religiously brought up in her youth, but the difference of the values. The value difference between materialism, especially modern materialism, and Krishna consciousness is vast. There's a duality there. That every devotee will have to face, because you'll see it. And if you're just becoming early, just beginning to be a devotee, it's not so hard, because you still have many of the same tastes as the rest of human society, and so it's not so big a contrast. But as you proceed further, you will notice there's a dichotomy of value. So this is one level of, you could say, duality that we have to experience. But there's a much greater duality that we haven't come up against yet. And that is the duality, or the difference between the material world in total, everything material, and the spiritual world in total. That there is actually a place. And this place has none of the characteristics of here. And this place has almost none of the characteristics of there. There is some characteristic here of there, because we are souls, we are eternal, we are spiritual. But we're wrapped up, you could say, in matter. And everything that we see and look at is also matter. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita this. There's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence. Very systematically, Bhagavad Gita gives us all the elements for understanding. So Krishna explains, these are my separated material energies, and the spiritual energy, or the living entity, is existing within this and manipulating things. So this is the presence of spirit within matter. But what is it like when there's only spirit and no matter? That we have no access to, that we cannot actually comprehend, because we're here. So how do we get from here to there? How do we face this challenge, an even greater challenge and a greater duality than the duality between being a pious person and an impious person? But to be actually able to leave this place, to be able to leave the material world. Now most of us, most of the time, never think like that. We don't think, I'm supposed to leave this place. I'm supposed to be here and be happy and peaceful and have my family grow up and be devotees and go on with my life, and these things I can accept. But I'm supposed to leave this place? I'm supposed to leave this place? Where would I go? Now there's a very important question. Where would I go? And what's that place like? And why should I go there? I like it here. And so Srila Prabhupada, in his lectures, if you listen to him, on and on and on, he's always presenting so many negative arguments against life in the material world in a very basic, simple point. Just like, for example, one man was on one morning walk, the devotees were talking about how modern scientists, they're trying to prolong life. They have got a machine. They have a machine that does this. They're making artificial limbs. They've created so many things so life can be prolonged and prolonged. And possibly one day people can live forever. And Prabhupada says, yes, but the scientist will have to die. Ask him why he has to die. And then he would go on about this point. They would glorify what achievements were being presented to the world. And Prabhupada would just keep coming back to this one point. But ask him why he won't be here to see them. He'll have to die. And then he said, we have this cornerstone. We can touch on this. We can kick on this over and over and over again and defeat anyone's argument. So what he was referring to was, any argument to say that life is actually progressive and we're happy here and it's a wonderful place to be, can be actually, we can point out the defect in that argument by saying, then why do you have to die? Do you want to die? Do you want your family members to die? Do you think that death is pleasant? Perhaps it's pleasant if your life is so excruciatingly agonizing that you want to die. But then you can't say you're happy. Then you're so miserable you want to die. But an average person doesn't want to die. And if you deal with an older person closely, you'll see, even they're old, they're losing their memory, they're losing their physical sort of capabilities, but they don't want to die. And as they come close to the thought of death, generally speaking, unless they have spiritual understanding, they become afraid. They don't want to die. They don't want to leave the pleasures that they've experienced and accumulated in this world. Within this life, they don't want to give that up. They want to remain happy within whatever situation they're in. But because death is there, Srila Prabhupada absolutely certifies that this place is miserable. Just on that one thing. And then of course he adds for those who are kind of young. He adds, but then there's also old age. And those who are getting older begin to realize, oh yes, old age is also quite unpleasant. And then for those who are not old yet, then there's also disease. And nobody wishes to be sick. And you could tell the proof of that in how many medicines are always being created. And I had a friend working in the hospital, and she said the biggest department in the hospital is the sedation. She said, it's amazing. People can't tolerate even a little pain. They have to have some sedation. So there's a nurse who goes around and provides a sedation. Because if she didn't do it in a very regular manner, they would ask for so much relief. And it wouldn't be good for them. So these are the miseries of material life. But if we want to know about that place, beyond this place, you have to come in touch with somebody from that place. You cannot go there by your speculatory ideas of what it would be like. Somebody has to come from there and tell you what it is like. Just like the astronauts were going to the moon. And Srila Prabhupada would say, I can tell you without doubt they have not gone there. Because I can tell you what the moon is like. Because it is described in Vedic literature. And what they're describing and what is described in Shastra is different. So they have not actually attained to that destination. So now we come to the point, this question about the spiritual world. What is it like? How are we going to know? And therefore, how are we going to go if we don't know? So Srila Prabhupada has, of course, come to us. He's touched our lives. All of us who are here, either directly or indirectly, our lives have been touched by him. Because he was the one who took the task on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to bring the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the West. And ironically, sitting before me, there's many more Indian faces than there are Westerners. But many of them came in touch with Krishna consciousness in the West, not in India. In India, they came in touch with Hinduism. And when they came to Australia or to another part of this world where there was no strong Hindu control, they gradually learnt about Krishna consciousness as well. And now they have an understanding of what is this perverted Hinduism, what it is actually perverted from, and what is actually the purpose of the spiritual culture of India. And otherwise, they would not have known. They would have gone on their lives, busy accumulating wealth and taking care of their families and doing all the things that a materialistic Indian of today would be doing, piously or impiously. So they're in the same category as the Westerners. They've fallen, because they've fallen from this Vedic spiritual culture. So Srila Prabhupada took up the task at the latest of ages, at a time when most people are retiring and all they like to do is go on cruises and take it easy and sit at home and do all sorts of relaxing things. Srila Prabhupada began his mission and spent 10 years traveling, non-stop traveling. And believe me, it wasn't, you could see in Srila Prabhupada, it wasn't for fun. It wasn't altogether pleasurable to travel like that for somebody in their 70s. That goes without saying. So Srila Prabhupada would explain to us that to get transcendental knowledge, it has to come in an authorized line of disciplic succession. It has to come through authority. It's not that you just hear somebody off the street, they give you some spiritual thoughts and some meditations that they've created of their own inspiration, and automatically one makes spiritual advancement. One may meet somebody very extraordinary, but to actually take up serious spiritual life, you have to meet somebody who is in an authorized line of disciplic education and training, where the training is passed on through realization of the knowledge. Realized knowledge is passed down. So Srila Prabhupada represented such a chain, the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And we say Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, this particular parampara or this disciplic chain, because the chain begins with the line known as the Madhva line, which is like there are four main Vaishnava Sampradayas, and one of them, the Brahma Sampradaya, is dominated by the presence of Madhvacharya. And so it is called the Madhva Sampradaya. And Madhvacharya, he was very, very prominent. And his particular characteristic was that he was a dualist instead of an Advaitist. And he spoke against the Shankar philosophy that everybody and everything is one. We are all actually God and we don't know it. But he spoke against this philosophy. And you see a picture of Madhvacharya. What is he doing? He's going like this. Always in the picture, he has his fingers like this. Two. One is God. Two is the Jiva. We are eternally servants of God. This was the preeminent aspect of his teaching. So in that line, in that preceptorial line, sometime later, I think Madhavendra Puri is the disciple of Lakshmipati Tirtha. It comes in this line from Madhvacharya. Comes Srila Madhavendra Puri. And little is known about Madhavendra Puri's life, because at that time they didn't have the internet, they didn't have Google, they didn't have all these wonderful things that we have, so we can sort of put a word into space and cyberspace, all the information you need comes rushing to you on your computer. They didn't have any of this, they didn't have a camera, they weren't able to capture things for posterity. I recently read a quote that said, "Never in the history of the world has so much been said by so many people about so little." So it was a different culture. We can't even imagine living as personalities who are existing within this cultural setting. But Madhavendra Puri was so renounced and so exalted in his own inner meditation that often he travelled simply alone, because he didn't really want to talk, even with a companion. He wanted to keep his consciousness internally focused on his Lord. So we'll hear more about Madhavendra Puri, but I wanted to just start today by explaining how he is this connecting link between this Madhva Sampradaya and the Gaudiya Sampradaya. The Gaudiya Sampradaya, or the disciplic line, is coming from Lord Chaitanya. That's called the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And the Madhva Sampradaya comes from Madhvacharya. So he is the connecting link between these two lineages. And therefore he's very, very significant. So in some places, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, for example, he describes Madhavendra Puri as like a seed. He was like the seed that was going to be planted, and from that seed was going to come a great tree. And the tree that was going to come from this seed is the teachings and the example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is the tree. Madhavendra Puri is like the seed. So he's the seed of the sentiment of love of God that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to manifest fully and totally and in the most extraordinary manner. Madhavendra Puri coming in the Madhva Sampradaya meant that previous to him, that Sampradaya was known for the devotion to God in a particular mood. The mood was one of reverence. If God is the Supreme Lord, He's the Lord of Lords, He's the Master of everyone, and He's very, very great, and we should all serve Him. So this is, of course, also part of our understanding and our philosophical acceptance as well. But previous to Madhavendra Puri, this was actually the whole concept was like this. And what that meant was, even though there was worship of Krishna, there was no worship of Radha Krishna. Radha was not there. So just now, as we were singing Jai Radha Madhava, I got just a glimpse that none of what we're singing about was known prior to Madhavendra Puri. Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari, Gopi Jana Balava, Giri Varadhari. These are all names of Krishna in relationship to his pastimes in Vrindavan. So if you go, even today, to Udupi, which is in Karnataka, you can see there Udupi Krishna, a beautiful deity. Has anyone visited Udupi Krishna? Yes? Very beautiful, yes? But you only get a very short darshan through a very small hole. And then you have to move because there are so many people coming to see him. So Udupi Krishna, this is Gopal. But this is Gopal in Dwarka. So he's not exactly Gopal. He's with Devaki. Is this correct? This was my understanding. That he's Krishna, but not in the mood of Vrindavan Krishna. Not Kishore Krishna. Not the Krishna that we see when we go into the temple, Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, and we see Radha Balava. Not like that. So it's very helpful for us sometimes to trace back how not everything that we know now has always been that way. Because it gives us appreciation of what we have. So previous to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this worship of Radha and Krishna was not there. But Madhavendra Puri, when he was leaving this world, he was chanting a prayer. He was praying to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada describes that prayer as saying, "My dearly beloved, I am mortified for want of your presence. Please tell me, my Lord, how can I see you? Be kind upon me, considering me to be the poorest of all your devotees." This was his mood. But special in that mood, he was calling to Krishna, "Ai Dina Dayadri Na." And this particular mood was not the mood of the Madhva Sampradaya as such. It was particular to Srila Madhavendra Puri, this particular sentiment of ecstasy in love of God in the mood of separation. "I cannot see you. I am so fallen. I'm so far away from you. Please tell me how I can reach you." This particular sentiment was there in Madhavendra Puri. So Prabhupada said, with Madhavendra Puri, both the devotees and God himself take the risk of serving each other at all costs. At all costs. Both the devotees and God himself. That means that in this kind of intimate, sweeter love, not the love of reverence, which is very formal, where God is great and I am his servant and I do what he says and he gives me whatever I need to enjoy in this world. Not in that kind of love, in that kind of mood of love, but in the mood of love that I want to be with you. I cannot see you. Please reveal yourself to me. I'm so fallen. Please, I want only you. In that particular mood of love, the Lord becomes no longer the Lord, the great Lord, but he becomes the dearest, most intimate friend of the devotee. And the devotee becomes the dearest, most intimate friend of Krishna himself. So Madhavendra Puri introduced this conception, and he introduced the conception of conjugal love, Radha and Krishna worship. and he sowed the seed of Prema Bhakti, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became the towering tree, dropping honey sweet fruits of the same concept of Prema Bhakti, or devotion, loving devotion to Krishna, in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, in the mood of separation, in the mood that I really want to see you. That's the most important thing to me. Everything else is meaningless without you. So I'll read a little bit of, I think I have here, what Srila Prabhupada says about Madhavendra Puri. He says, Madhavendra Puri, from Madhavendra Puri came Ishwara Puri. From Ishwara Puri came Lord Chaitanya. This is the disciplic line. So, evam parampara. So, in the parampara system, or the disciplic lineage, you will find no change. The original word is there. That is the thing. They are not foolish to manufacture something new. What new? So this is very radical. When I was reading this, I was noticing my mind was a little bit like, you can't manufacture anything new. Because the world today is running on new, have you noticed? Any type of machinery that you get, there's always a new model coming out, and it has a few more features. And then the one after that will have a few more features. So you can get that as well, and you can sell this one and buy that one and so on. So everything is running on new and new. And Prabhupada is saying, what new? People are after something new manufactured by this tiny brain. What new things can you manufacture? That is all nonsense. If you really want the thing, then you have to take the old, the oldest. You cannot change anything. Now, of course, here, Srila Prabhupada is not talking about technology. Or we'd all be feeling like we had to get out our record players. Can you change any law of the sun? The sun's rising or setting? The old laws, they are going on and you have to follow them. So you cannot manufacture anything. The same seasons are coming for millions of years. And there was a system of change season that is going on. Now we see, ironically, how by man's manipulation and his greed, he's even altered the natural seasons. Just see what newness and greed and manufacturing and technology has gifted us with. A crazy situation, actually, a dangerous situation, where nature is not complying with what man wants her to do. He wants from nature, he wants the water. He wants from nature a happy life. He wants this, he wants that. He wants to manipulate nature, take the oil out of the inside of the earth and find out this and do this and enjoy this and do that. But nature is not correspondingly agreeing to be treated in this way, and therefore is withholding these natural resources, such as a basic one like water. And then everybody has to suffer. And then we complain. And people complain, well, how can you say this, God? You know, why would we have all this? And how can you say there's somebody in control? Look, everything's going haywire. We say, yes, everything's going haywire because you're not accepting his control. You're not accepting his authority. You're not accepting that actually there's a controller, and therefore you're interfering in so many ways. And you cannot actually interfere with his plan. He will control you by the new arrangements that he will make to make life more miserable, actually, rather than more pleasant for you, by withholding these resources. So Prabhupada says, you cannot manufacture anything. The same seasons are coming for millions of years. As there was a system of change of season that is going on millions of years before, millions of years before. The sun rose, the sun set, it was going on, always going on. Millions of years, death was there, that is going on. And birth was there, that is going on. And disease was there, that is going on. So what you can change? You are simply foolishly wasting your time. There is no possibility of changing the laws of nature. It is simply a futile attempt. Therefore, those who are sane people, they understand that this life is meant for not fighting with the material laws, which I cannot change. Better stop this nonsense and realize yourself what you are, what is your duty, and what the human form of life is meant for. That is stated here, that you have to realize Krishna. You have to realize Krishna. You have to become Krishna conscious. If you become Krishna conscious, then your life's mission is fulfilled. So Prabhupada over and over and over again tells us, you have to realize Krishna. You have to have an attachment for Krishna. And an attachment we all have experienced. If there's a boy and a girl, if we haven't had direct experience, we've seen it on the aeroplane screens. There's a boy and a girl. They surmount everything to meet, to enjoy the pleasure of each other's company. It's obsessive. Attachment is obsessive. Our attachments in this world are obsessive. Are we obsessed with Krishna? If we're not obsessed with Krishna, then we need more Krishna consciousness in our lives. We need to feel like Madhavendra Puri is expressing, I'm so far away, I have no qualification, please be kind to me. Please reveal to me my relationship with you. Srila Prabhupada, in one very nice lecture in San Francisco, he was speaking on a very potent verse of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 1. Does anyone know that verse? Maya. Yes. Yes. Yoga. Yes. Attachment. Yes. So this particular verse to the Prophet was perhaps the verse that Prophet spoke on most all over the world. And one time I looked it up in his, you know, the compilation folio, his transcriptions, and I found that there were 23 lectures so far, or 21 lectures on that one verse. And maybe even more, but there were, if there were 23, 20 of them were in different places. So he, all over the world he spoke on this particular verse. So this verse is a very important verse. And it begins in the first line with the word ashakti. And Srila Prabhupada likes to speak about the meaning of the word ashakti. Ashakti means?
Attachment.
And he explains that attachment is natural. You cannot give up attachment. But you can change the subject matter of your attachment. You can be attached to, obsessed with something in this world, or you can become attached to Krishna. And he explains there also that in the beginning for the neophyte, the beginning devotee, ritualistic worship is very important because he has no taste, he has no interest. So he has to follow rules. You have to do this now. You have to do this. If you don't do it, you won't generate any progress. So there's a stage in which this ritualistic worship is very beneficial. He explains that thinking that God is great, hearing of the greatness of God, is very important in the beginning, because when you understand that someone is great, then you will be interested in serving them. Because serving the great is natural. If you hear of some great personality, we serve them. We want to go see them, hear from them, meet them, get their autograph. A cricket player on a t-shirt, we want to do an autograph. So we can just be near the greatness of that personality. So he said in the beginning, hearing God's greatness will help us to want to serve him. But we have to develop a shakti. A shakti means attachment. Attachment to Krishna in one of four different relationships. And Srila Prabhupada spoke about each one, the value of each one. As a friend, as a servant, as a friend, as a parent, and ultimately as a lover. So this one as a lover, this is the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the seed of that gift of loving God in the mood of a lover, can you imagine trying to explain this to somebody who had no prior understanding of anything to do with spiritual consciousness? If you've tried, you can't. Especially somebody who's in a different tradition, who sees God just simply as great, and you try to explain to them that God can become your lover, they're like, what? But Prabhupada was not shy to explain all of this, because Srila Prabhupada had realization. And we need realization also, so that we too will not be shy to explore further and deeper into our relationship with Krishna. So I'd like to stop here for the want of keeping on time. And if anyone has any questions, they could please ask. Yes.
This verse you were talking about, Madhavendra Puri, in particular place to Mathuranath.
Yes.
Why his mood is look different because we...
Mathuranath. He's praying to Mathuranath. Now this is a deeper subject which we'll go into in more detail in another class. But he's praying to Mathuranath because he's praying in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And his prayer is not an ordinary prayer, like our prayer is an ordinary prayer. An ordinary prayer is, oh God, please help me, I'm having a difficult life. Oh please be personal blessings upon me and my family. That's an ordinary prayer. Just like when you go, you see so many people circumambulating Giriraj. And sometimes they build little houses on the side of the rocks. If they want a particularly large house, they build it up. They'd like a very large house. And sometimes they tie two branches together. That means, please make my son marry a nice wife. Or please give me a nice wife or a nice husband. So I'm tying these together and I'm praying like this to you. Please, please, please give me something for my life in this world. This is an ordinary prayer. But an extraordinary prayer is a prayer from up there, a prayer from the spiritual world. So Srimati Radharani's prayer is being spoken by Madhavendra Puri, even though the same words can be applied by us in our day-by-day ordinary sense. But he was extraordinary. So he's calling Mathuranath because Srimati Radharani is saying, oh, now you have become the master of Mathura. And now I am leaving my life in the mood of separation from Krishna. So that is why he is Mathura. Not because he is in the mood of Mathura, he is in the mood of Vrindavan. Any other questions? Yes.
Did he meet Lord Chaitanya?
Did he meet Lord Chaitanya? I cannot say for sure. I don't think so, but he went to Navadvip, and all the primary associates of Lord Chaitanya are all directly or indirectly initiated by him. Advaita Acharya is his disciple, Ishwara Puri is his disciple, Keshava Bharati was his disciple, Paramananda Puri was his disciple, Nityananda Prabhu was his disciple. There were so many of the associates of Lord Chaitanya were linked with Madhavendra Puri. And when he went to Navadvip, he stayed in the house of Jagannath Mishra and Sachidevi. So, but whether Lord Chaitanya was a small baby at the time or not born yet, that's not clear from the pastime. But yes, he was very, if he didn't, he just was very close to meeting Lord Chaitanya. It's sometimes said that the reason why he chose this sampradaya was because Madhavacharya was so firm in his stand against impersonalism, with his fingers raised like this, two, not one. Because the main problem in the world today is impersonalism, in spiritual terms. Materialism is the main problem, but a materialist cannot be other than an impersonalist. Because how can you can't be, they don't go together well. So impersonalism, thinking that God is either, he's something, something, qualifying him as something, something up there, or he's not a person like you and me. If he was a person, a supreme person like you and me, I would have to be answerable for so many things. That's heavy. And he owns everything. I don't own anything if he's a person. He owns everything. He's the friend of everyone. He's within the atoms, between the atoms. He's within everyone's heart. I'm interacting with him all the time. This is personalism. Impersonalism means I'm separate from that. I have a relationship with things irregardless of God. I could take him or leave him. This is impersonalism, materialism. So Madhvacharya stood against that and went like this. So it is said, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated that very much. So this may be some reason. And also Madhavendra Puri was there. He was there. He was an acharya of the Madhva Sampradaya. And of course he's not an ordinary person. He's a Nitya Siddha personality come. So he provided that link between the two.
What is the exact difference between the philosophy which Madhvacharya propounded to Ramanujacharya? Both are bona fide. What is the subtle difference between them?
I'm not an authority on the different sampradayas. However, I know that both of them have a touch of Lakshmi Narayan worship, and Ramanujacharya specifically Lakshmi Narayan worship, because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying with Gopal Bhatta, his family, he was playing with Gopal Bhatta's father in a joking way and asking him questions. Why is it that you're Lakshmi, who's supposed to be so chaste? She's the chaste wife of Narayan. Why is it that she is also attracted to Krishna? Isn't this improper? She's doing austerities. Have you been to Bailvan? Has anyone been to Bailvan? Yes. So in Bailvan you'll see, in across the river from the Rasastali area of Vrindavan, just across the river is Bailvan, also called Srivan, because that is the grove of the 12 forests in Vrindavan. That particular forest is the forest of Lakshmi. And you see there's a temple there, and Lakshmi is seated like this, meditating. She's meditating because she would like to be able to enter into the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, because they're so extraordinarily sweet and so extraordinarily tasty. But she's also attracted to her, of course, we know Lakshmi, Narayan, and Krishna are the same. But the mood is different, because this is a reverential worship, and the worship of Krishna is done in intimacy. So Lakshmi, she cannot, because she cannot give up the conception of being the consort of the Supreme Personality. She cannot give up her remembrance that he is the great Almighty and I am his, because that is the transcendental nature, it is a transcendental pastime. So Madhvacharya, he has in Urupi Krishna, he's worshipping Krishna alone. He's worshipping Krishna as well as worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. So there is some slight difference there. There's a difference in flavour. There's subtle differences between the sampradayas. So that is the only thing that... And of course Prabodhananda Saraswati and his brother Venkata Bhatta, when they heard these joking words of Lord Chaitanya, they became convinced also that actually the worship of Krishna is more attractive even than the worship of Lakshmi Narayan. So they had a change of heart. But that, this is the line of Ramanujacharya goes through. It's a bona fide line. So perhaps to maintain that, I don't know. Yes.
Madhavacharya used to worship Krishna and Lakshmi Narayan both. Because we know that, you know, in Brahma Madhya, Gaudiya Sampradaya, we know that Krishna is the source of all human emotions, but
yes.
The other Sampradaya believe that Narayana is
yes. When they worship Krishna in the mood of being an expansion of Narayan, in our Gaudiya line we worship Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the Swayam, the original form of personality of Godhead, and that all the other forms, Vishnu and so forth, are expansions of Krishna. But when worshipping the Lord in the form of Narayan as the supreme incarnation, your destination is
Vaikuntha.
So the residence of Vaikuntha, this is a very esoteric subject, because for us, you know, we need to know right and wrong, and is this this and that's that, and we should do this and we shouldn't do that. But when it comes to sentiments of the heart, those who worship Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan, with deep devotion, they wish to go to Vaikuntha, to enter into the mood of the Vaikuntha residents who worship Lakshmi Narayan. And there, it describes in Brihad Bhagavatam, which is Sanatana Goswami speaks of this, the residents of Vaikuntha, they think that sometimes our Lord goes to the earth and he has some pastimes like a human being and then he comes back. So that is their love. So that's not wrong, but that kind of love will take you to that destination. And the love of those who love in the mood of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, which is authorized, that Krishna Sri Bhagavan Swayam. Of course, if there's an argument on theology, philosophy, then we stand very firm by the authority and text of the Bhagavatam. But if it's a question of heart, just like if I have, my son is sitting here and these nice boys are sitting here, naturally I think, my son is so much nicer than these little boys. They're very nice. But my son is just so wonderful, you know, and much more good looking, and he's so intelligent too, and so on. So that's the heart. That's different. But if I was to say, my son is older than them, how old are you? And I find out their age and he's younger, I have to accept that that's a fact, that's factual. But the sentiment of the heart is something different. So there's two there. One is the sentiment of the worship of Lakshmi Narayan, and the other is factually, no, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. The Bhagavatam is accepted as the praman, or the evidence for this statement.
So when we are worshipping Krishna also, then what is the goal of the worship to Krishna?
Their goal is to please Narayan by glorifying his pastimes of Krishna as Krishna. And so what happens, interestingly enough, is when if you're sensitive and you're actually trained and properly understand things, when you enter into a place where that worship is going on, you don't feel 100% comfortable. Not you don't feel comfortable like you're critical of their worship, but the mood is different. You can't quite understand why, but it doesn't seem quite the same. The reason it's not quite the same is because the mood is different. So gradually, as we develop our own tradition, our own understanding of the depth of Krishna consciousness, then we offer respects to everyone, but we stay very deep and tight in our own mood and our own understanding given to us by, of course, to the Prabhupada on behalf of the disciplined succession. That's why sometimes if people pick up things, you know, on the internet, here's something about Krishna, here's something about Radha, here's this, here's that. You know, it comes from somewhere, I don't know where, but it's about Radha, but, and they put it all together. It comes to sort of, they nullify each other, because one is trying to present sweetness and the other is trying to present opulence. And so you get confused. So we have to take it in our own, through our own teachings. It's much better. Yes.
What do you say to someone who says, okay, you have to die, so you accept that, and then because you have to die and life is so short, you try to enjoy life as much as possible?
Prabhupada would call him a fool and a rascal. You can't say very much to somebody who's intent on enjoying materialism. You can't say very much. You can preach to them, but they sometimes cannot hear it, because there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that explains that, that if one is intent on enjoying, as Prahlad Maharaj said this to his father, if somebody is intent on enjoying material life here in the home and the family, he cannot be actually helped in spiritual life either by his own efforts, by the efforts of others, or the combination of the two. And so we experience that sometimes. So then what you can do, you can be patient, you can engage them in some service, agyata sukriti, some devotional activity they're not aware of doing, that will bear fruit, but they may not be able to directly take to this perception that actually life is meant for another higher goal. They'll be densely attached, intensely and densely attached to here. And we're trying to break that in ourselves. This is our challenge in this life. Alright, I think we should stop here because I'm getting the eye. Thank you very much.